Hi, I'm Naomi Murphy and this is the Locked Up Living podcast, where we talk with a wide range of people about harsh aspects of institutional life.
We also explore some of the ways to overcome them and to grow and develop. I'm David Jones. So join us every Wednesday morning, 6 o'clock UK time, for a fresh podcast.
So today we're really delighted to welcome along Sally Needham. Sally is Human Development and Performance Lead at Sheffield United Academy and also acts as a consultant outside that job role. Really pleased to have you on today, Sally. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Naomi. Nice to meet you, David.
Very nice to meet you. Thanks so much for giving us your time, Sally.
It's fine.
So, can we begin? Perhaps you can tell us something about your current roles and why mental health became so interesting to you.
Yeah, so my full-time role at the minute is, as you said, human development, performance, culture. So a lot of my job role is about giving the players and staff, but definitely the players in the mental health and wellbeing space, is giving the players understanding of how their body and brain operates through the lens of neuroscience, understanding how this plays out in daily life, and what tools and strategies they can use as part of their daily habits, but as well as performance end stuff to help the fact of what they feel, understand about themselves is kind of a part of a process. So they're working on not just the technical stuff and in the gym on the S&C stuff, they're working on themselves, understanding themselves, developing their, what we call as their window of tolerance, so their soil that then allows them then to be high performers really, but also cope with demands of the game and life. And then my other kind of job roles is I go and do consultancy. So I fly tomorrow. I'm going to Norway Women for 12 days on camp. But yeah, the reason I got into this space really was I was coaching, went on a coaching qualification, really interested in the psychosocial. But people used to talk around confidence and communication and understanding the player, but it were very surface level. So I went and did a course away from football, and it were very much child development of understanding about what happens in conception through brain development, what happens in interactions, what happens in interruptions, what happens in behaviour. Looked at the latest in attachment theory, neuroscience, and it really kind of resonated with me around players' behaviours. That's why I went on it to start with as well, struggling with the players' behaviour to understand them. And then it kind of took me a while to get back into football and bring all the science into it, the application. But for me, from my perspective, any high performer will be dependent on what their bodily state is. So one, whatever is their bodily state is what will dependent on how much output they will have in S&C, movement, endurance, decision-making, planning, predicting, creativity, confidence, self-belief. So it's a decision-making sport. And we know that the research obviously shows us that well-being is massively linked to performance. And also we have an issue within the game around when players finish, how they transition in the well-being space. So what my job role is really is here is really trying to give the boys an understanding of themselves early on. So we give them the knowledge, the tools and the support, because we know that obviously your brain and body don't settle down until the mid-20s. So we're trying to give them that early so they know themselves early. They start to develop some of this stress response system early and put things in the soil earlier so they'll cope with then demands of the game and life. So yeah, that's where I'm at with it.
Great. That's a really good description, Sally. But tell me, Sally, the other week I went to the cinema and I saw a play. It was a play put on at the National Theatre called Dear England. I don't know whether you've seen it or not.
I haven't, no.
Oh, right. Well, I'm a totally naive idiot in this situation and I'm clearly talking to you about sucking eggs. But it's essentially it's about how Gareth Southgate took over the England football team and turned it round, allegedly, with the help of a psychologist. So it sounds as if that's the kind of thing you're doing and that it's a really tough job.
Yeah, so I'm very privileged that Pippa Grange mentors me. So Pippa is a psychologist in the Gareth Southgate's play. And so, yeah, so I'm really fortunate that she mentors me. So I know the story well. Oh, wow. I know the process behind it well. I just haven't seen it, which I really should go, I think, to see it before Pippa shouts at me. But no, she wouldn't. But, yeah, it's Pippa's angle and approach is very much from a humanistic perspective. And, yeah, I think we're trying the same here. The neuroscience is probably what differs in me and Pippa. But I know that Pippa's really interested in the polyvagal theory and looking at all that stuff at the minute, which is what underpins my work. So I work closely with Pippa. Yeah, she's a great character, an even better person, and somebody that's really had a massive influence, and one that does it from the background. She's not really one for putting herself in the front, which I really like. But yeah, we're trying to. When I first came into Sheffield, a lot of people said to me, well, what's your job role? And a lot of it was changing perspective. So we're so in a system that is so deep in culture that we're trying to change some of the lenses that we look at it. And fortunately for me, because I came into the job role and I can remember at the time, Jack Lester really promoted it, wanted it in, backed it all the way. It gave me so much social capital. And then because I come from a coaching background, I had another bit of social capital. And then I could tie the neuroscience. And to be fair, like Gareth and probably the people that Pippa work with, you have to have the right frame of mind people and the right open-minded people to see things differently and it land differently and want to work with it and be open-minded. And I think that's what's worked here. We've got a smaller academy than a bigger academy, but we've got the right people that really have took it on, and it's become part of the fixture in all departments. So not just in the coaching side of it, but in our education team, in our S&C. So yeah, it's the people in front of us are changing. Football is steeped in culture and ego and a system that just repeats things. So yeah, so we're trying to change it. And obviously, as you said, Pippa were probably the forefront and the one that's really had the most change from an international perspective at the minute. So,
oh, that's brilliant. That's a really good description. I didn't realise I was touching gold when I asked you that question. So how many neuroscientists are there working in this kind of elite level of football?
Yeah, so I'm obviously here. I'm not a neuroscientist. Come from a coaching background, but the neuroscience lens is where I've gone. So we've got it here. There's a gentleman called Jez Buster at FC Copenhagen that's doing it from a cognitive lens. So he's very much around cognition, working memory, scanning, decision making, inhibition, how that all works together. My lens is very much from an affective lens, so very much around the human behavior, emotions, feelings, and then contemplative, which is all the meditation, mindfulness stuff that we now thought probably once a blue moon was fluffy, and now it's backed up by the neuroscience. So there's me, there's Jez, there's little pockets in the sense of Schalke, Norwich have got a soccer bot, which is a little bit of a building that you try to look at all the inhibition stuff. They don't really know if that's going to get the data that they're expecting. Then there's little companies that have popped up, like Neuro 11 Workout at Liverpool and things like that. So it's starting to gather some traction. Actually, application-wise, I use a quote by Wenger quite a lot that says around, Arsene Wenger said in 2020 that he thinks the neuroscience is the next big game changer, but has not really had much transferability into football. A lot of people will go down the cognitive lens because it's a decision-making sport and that's what we're trying to look at. But from my perspective, as I've said, for us to make good decisions or for us to scan, which is very much the cognitive lens that Jez says, it all depends on our bodily state. So for me, that's one of the fundamental things that I think we need to more look at before then we start to then build that stuff on. So it's people are getting interested in it. It's growing. There's not really many people working in that space. And because I think if you're a neuroscientist, you have to have the capital to be able to bring it into the football, and then the buy-in of them people that played the game, coached the game, got the badges. So there's that kind of broadness, which I think sometimes sports psychology has that little bit of that barrier as well sometimes. So it's few and far between. Is it the way that I think the game's going to go for definite? Is it something that I feel like from my PhD, my prof doc data, that is beneficial? Yes. So hopefully it's probably where we need to start to look at a little bit more, which is looking at the individual, but what's deeper. We know how much childhood has an effect on later on in behaviour. So that's even a bigger piece to probably then start to delve down into.
Yes. So, well, we know there's a lot of staff focused on improving performance in sport, particularly football. But I think, as you mentioned earlier on, you're focused quite a lot on well-being.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the transition from finishing playing an elite sport to later life. Do you think that's enough of a priority in elite sport?
I would say in football, I don't think we do enough for it and preparing for it. As the structure and the understanding and knowledge of that space being there before, probably not. So it's probably not done intentionally. I said to some of the boys, and we've got probably an issue at the minute with snus in the game and things like that that's coming out. And I'll say to the boys, it's something that you can take for 3 hours that enables that stress levels or anxiety levels to come down. But actually, it's not a bad thing, stress and anxiety, if we know how to feel it in his body and work with it. What will then happen if you don't understand about that and work with that now, when you get to finish, you'll just always be dependent on just putting a snus in to lower that anxiety or that stress. So I think because we didn't know about how we develop their stress response system as much, and it's not being brought into it, probably that's where the key needs to be in the education piece of, if we do this now and we get them into it early, and then they've got enough in their window of tolerance to be able to cope with the transition, we shouldn't have the problems as much at the end. We've got loads of stuff that you could start to delve into more around, like identity, loss of identity. Is it a cultural perspective in how they then become this status figure in the football when they lose that, who are they? Elements of then family life. You know, have they got a strong, stable family life that then helps support that? So I feel like we have programmes that give them experiences of the transition and what people have probably faced and the issues they've faced. But I think that, again, is coming up with some tools and maybe not as much of the knowledge and understanding and being more preventative earlier on than just trying to then do an intervention later on with them. So I think it's a piece of work that needs to be broadly looked at. Does it need to be just football? Probably not. Does it need to be in our education system? Probably so. So if we all had a more of a trauma-informed approach from an early age, even in a football setting, but then they've got it in at home and at school and wherever, probably going to help our society anyway, depending on what then they come out, if they come out elite sports. But compared to other sports, I don't really know. I've not really looked at other sports. I think for us, as football, it's, as I keep saying, it's probably a very ego system, and how we work with that then system is probably important later on. But there has been changes. Does probably need to be more? Yes, because we still have cases of it. But more people are coming out and talking about it now and kind of expressing and understanding it. The boys, it's a common language around here. It's a common open process. There's no bad or good feelings, emotions. They're just on an array and a continuum, and how we experience them and process them and work with them is our key to what we try and do with them. So, yeah, understanding self's massive, understanding how you think, feel, behave, all that, and your daily habits is something that we just try and get into the boys so they've got enough in the system later on when they are transitioning or they do get released or they are going into a different club. So, yeah.
Thanks very much, Sally. Can you just remind me what it was in your own life that led to your career pathway?
Yeah, so I did a course called the Advanced Youth Award at the FA, and that basically looked at the four corner model and they showed you psych and social. And I went back coaching. I was coaching at the FA at the time in the schools program, 5 to 11s. And then I decided, and then, well, the kids were just flourishing in front of me, and I thought, right, I want to know more about this. I want to know the why behind it all, and nobody really could tell me. And then I went to do my UEFA licence, and when you're doing that, you have to do an 11v11 team. So I came to Sheffield United actually to do the girls' RTC, and we had a player there that was what would be termed, I would term now, distressed behaviour, but was challenging behaviour when I first came here. And got to a point where I was considering, do I leave, do I enter not, what's going to happen, because causing issues with the team. And a friend, well, my best friend said to me, you're looking at a behaviour all wrong. And she had gone through all this training, she was doing it daily in schools with the most vulnerable children. And she kind of gave me a little bit of insight, and I thought, oh, yeah, I need to know this. This is probably the answers. And I went and did the course. It were 18 months. 18 months of pure therapy for me, because it showed you why you behave like you are, why is that coming to product. And so it were a massive journey for me, which were eye-opening and understanding people and why we behave like we are. So, and then I brought it back into football. So, yes, yeah, so it were literally would be the fact of challenging behaviour, a real curiosity about the psychosocial. My best friend putting a different lens on it for me. And then me finding a course that enabled me to understand the neuroscience and child behaviour. When I first started transferring it back into football, it was still very too much sciencey. Now I've been in the club and doing my prof doc with it and pulling it all together, I've got to a point now where it's a very complex subject that can never be become simple, because it's not. But it's been able to be able to simplify a complex subject so that the boys and the staff can actually construct it and get the heads around it all to be able to then apply it into the sport. So yes, yeah, so it was really, it was probably a bit of a course that changed my lens on it. And then obviously my doing my A license and a player that I struggle with to start with, that now relationship's good with it and kind of work through it. And then yeah, so and then into here really. So that's where the changes have been, through a course, another course, a conversation and a challenging behaviour situation that threw a bit of different light onto the subject.
That's a brilliant description really of how you encountered somebody with, I was going to say challenging, but exhibiting difficult behaviour traits. Mm. And rather than just dismissing it as challenging behaviour, you thought about it and found some way to reframe it and to work on that.
Yeah, only after the course though, and only because of my friend. And then I was like, all right, yeah, she's right. And she started going back down the neuroscience about behaviour, and I was like, oh yeah, like this is making sense, and this could answer the questions that I've had for a while. And so it needed the education piece, and how I view now behaviour in my lens and all like that is totally different. But that's probably one of the massive catalyst of kind of where I now am, and why I do the job role that I do, and why I look at the neuroscience, because I do think it's a missing piece of understanding the individual.
And a prof doc is what?
Professional doctorate in elite performance. So it's basically saying that I can apply the science into application. So when you do a normal PhD, you're showing that you're a good researcher to stay in academia. On a prof doc, I'm showing, hopefully, showing that I can be a good practitioner and take what says in the neuroscience and apply it into performance. So my professional doctorate is in elite performance, and I'm doing it out of UCLan. So, yeah, I've enjoyed it, to be fair. The prof doc, enjoyed it.
Good. Thanks, Naomi. I've been hogging the show.
No, that's fine. And you've already mentioned polyvagal theory, Sally, which some of our listeners are psychologists and probably know what you're talking about, but lots of our listeners aren't. So on that same theme of managing to simplify or translate quite complicated concepts, I wonder if you could give some kind of brief description of the concept for listeners and tell us a bit about why you found it so fascinating and so relevant.
Yeah, so polyvagal theory was on the course and got exposed to me, and obviously Stephen Porges' work, and it just resonated with some of the behaviours that you see in the players. So for me, I put through a model that we talk about red zone and green zone, and in the green zone you are up for social connection, your engagement systems online, and you're regulated, and you're optimizing what your bodily state and your brain is doing together. And for us in the team sport, it's massive because team resilience rests fundamentally on relationships. So how we are with each other in regulation will help to either upgrade us or downgrade us or tip us. And then we talk about the red zone, and in the red zone, you can be either in fight, flight or freeze. So a fight might be that you start losing what's termed in football your head and having an argument with the referee, or you have a bad challenge. Flight might be the fact that you say, oh, I've hurt my knee, I need to get off, I need to get out of this area. That's your body's way of keeping you safe. Or you might go into freeze response, which is an immobilisation. So your body starts shutting you down for fainting or for daydreaming and things like that. So where we found it is, I feel like a lot of players go more into freeze response. It's harder to then, because they've not, then got to go through from immobilisation to mobilisation to back into social engagement. It's a model that works for us in the sense of language and something that the boys can just use and the coaches can use. It's a very complex subject that's very much, we've made it quite simplistic in the sense of the red zone and green zone. And the boys get educated on how then their vagus nerve will then relate back into their nervous system. We do a lot of work with them that we don't tell them everything they need to know, but they also know the why. So they do breath work, they do yoga, they do a lot of mindfulness, journaling, but they always get to know the why first. So we know that when we're doing some breath work, it's our remote control of our body. So it allows us then to build up some what we call window of tolerance and our vagal efficiency and our vagal break. And then how then that applies into football is then what we talk to them about. So the polyvagal theory just seemed to just, when it got delivered, I'm thinking, yeah, this is what we see in football. Has it been transferred into sport? They're doing a little bit. So Michael Allison does some work for polyvagal theory. They do a little course on it as well. But yeah, it seemed to resonate with me. It seems to work in football. The players seem to understand it. So I think it's going to become bigger, the polyvagal theory. I think she's still number one bestseller at the minute, the holistic psychologist that's got the books out. She uses polyvagal theory. It's very much in the trauma world and getting bigger and stronger. So I think it's definitely linked to the football. Did we know it were linked? Probably not, but it is linked for me. I don't know if that's really answered your question, but yeah, polyvagal theory is about how your body and your brain operate, how you understand how that feels. You are always looking for threat. Your body's always on threat, internally, externally, environmentally. You can't shut it down, but it can be something that you can really work with if you physiologically feel yourself and understand your body and how your body and brain works, and you can work with it or it works against you. And that's what we're trying to understand the boys to do. They've got to work with what they're feeling, understand why they feel what they feel, because that's going to be, it either interrupts your performance or it can promote your performance. And that's where we're at with it.
Yeah, it was a really nice description, and also the lovely examples of how you're applying it practically to make it, you know, operationalising it and making it useful. It just reminded me, we had a conversation last year with Lee Dorwang of Unite, who, so I don't know whether you're using the Safe and Sound protocol at Sheffield United, because that was developed by Stephen Porges, yeah, and it's an auditory program which increases cues to safety and down regulates the fear, you know, the threat within the environment. But that's being increasingly used in sport in America.
Yes,
it might be something that's worth exploring. So you're working mainly within the academy at Sheffield United. Have child development shaped what you're doing? I assume so, given you've looked into it so deeply.
Yeah, so the child development stuff has come more into... So my job role at the FA before I moved here was coach development. So my job role within here, within the child development stuff, has been very much more around educating our coaches on what's going off in child development, how we can structure learning better, how we basically help with connection, how we use music in our settings, things like that. So there's definitely, we've used it more in the child development stuff, more of in the coaching as a practical sense. The way that then the child development stuff's come out later on is within coaches with the older settings is being around what's happening in childhood, this is now a result and this is probably what's driving their behaviour. And instead of then the coach is just thinking, oh, the this or the that, it's been an element of when this happens in childhood, this is probably what happens later on as a behaviour and an interruption in the brain development, which has gave the coach a different lens and a different way then of, right, we need to then approach this member differently because they're probably used to always that reaction. When they get that reaction, this is what they then, their bodily does to fight it and always protect them with it. So it's been a different lens, really. One, an application in the younger phases with the coaches and their role in able to co-regulate and how they structure the sessions. But then in the older lens, it's been more about, look, well, this is probably what's gone off and this is probably what's happening in behaviour, and then how we tie that then back to what the coach is doing there in intervention, but also shine a light on the behaviour with the older ones to start to understand why this is the case from what's happened, to then understand themselves a little bit more, to be able to then look internally to then start doing a lot of more of the work with it as well.
Thank you. And how have the individual players responded to what you're doing?
Really well, actually. I get that quite a lot about the boys because obviously majority of them are 16 to 20, so hard age. And then obviously I work with the younger ones as well. I think what kind of helped me was I got one player that I knew beforehand that I got good connection with. Then that kind of just evolved in another couple of players. And then I had probably about 6 or 7 players that used to come to me quite regular. And then they seemed to be able to then just start this flourishing and start to push on, which then started a couple of the other players were like, oh, well, if they're doing it and they've pushed on, I wonder if there's something in this. And then because I got the buy-in from the coaches kind of made it then a group thing. So we started as a group level and then I started to do a little bit of individual work with the players. I was sending the day to somebody. I get asked, so a 17-year-old of the day texts me, we use Kairos as a platform, text me on Kairos and said, can you send me a podcast and anything to do with like mentality and how I self-talk? I'll have one of them will come to me like a 16-year-old the other day, said, can I change up my journal a little bit? The others we have called water baths, the boys love them. I took somebody to Hot Pod Yoga the other day. They went and did Hot Pod Yoga. They wanted to do that. And then afterwards, I were like in the shower, I could hear the conversations happening with the owner of the studio, and he's talking away about his breath work and how he feels better with it and what he felt in there. And I think because it's become part of just natural and it's bought in from the staff. Our kind of manager comes in and does his bike breath work and meditation before he starts his day. He feels better with it. He feels like when he hasn't done it, he don't like it. I've just had a meeting with him actually a while ago and he's like, I feel so much better today with my breath work. So because the staff talk about it, it's always encouraged in the reviews, the coaches link it in. It's just norm in here. And the boys see it loads on TikTok and things like that anyway. And it's more culturally accepted. So it's become part of the fabric. It's the language. The boys enjoy it. They miss it when it's not put in. They ask for it. So I think it started the fact that people started seeing that the ones that were doing it were kicking on and it were like, right, I want a piece of this. And it's kind of then just been able to grow and build and naturally, organically just get through the academy system. So yeah,
thank you, Sally. You put across your ideas very clearly and powerfully, and that must help a lot in your job. But earlier on you mentioned elite sport being an area of strong egos. I wondered if that had led to any kind of personal challenges for you in putting across your understanding of neuroscience.
Do you know what? This is another question I always get. So for one, I'll bring it back to Pippa. Pippa said to me, if you're in a meeting and you say it 27 times, it must be important, so keep saying it. So that's kind of what I did. I kept re-saying things. And it wasn't the fact that they were against it. It was just the fact of it's a new concept, so you're having to reaffirm it. I got quite I used to think I'd want to do a lot of CPD, and I got, Jack used to say to me, be patient with it. And I did. I got more of the informal conversations. And then I'd drop a little WhatsApp and go, I saw this yesterday, reminded me of a conversation with you. And so I took my time when I came in, which I think helped. I haven't really come against much challenges. And people say to me, of course you have. And I'll say, I haven't really, because because I got the buy-in from our academy manager, and then the three influential members of our staff team that led the teams. And then when you deliver it and you can apply it to the football, and they've experienced some of these themselves as playing or in life, they'll go, oh my God, that's like how I was. You're like, yeah, well, this is that. So sometimes you have to be kind of, I wouldn't say I've had challenges, but sometimes I've had to kind of be strong in the sense of, I really think we're getting this person wrong, and can I just show you something? The benefit of me being in here and the people that I've had in here is the fact that they've gone, yeah, come on then. So I've shown them it, and they've gone, right, yeah, you're right. Well, what do we go about it then? What do we? So within the best intentions, what can we do best for the player? So I haven't really had much challenge. Whenever I've been out and about anywhere else, I've not really had much challenge. Because I think people, when you start to being able to bring it back to application and what happens in players, they'll either go, we've got to play like that, or they'll go, I've been like that, or I've felt like that. So you can start to relate it back in of giving people the why. So I haven't had much challenge. I had to be, my challenge was probably more with myself, in the sense of I had to be patient. I have to remember that in my head, I've known it now years, and where I think is they should know is probably not the way that I need to. So I need to be patient with that and keep reinforming the messages. So I would say that the challenge being really is being with me.
Can you say a bit more about that? I'm not quite sure I grasp.
So like sometimes there. because I did this course in 2017, it's took me now probably 5 or 6 years to really delve down into it and bring it into what I know and construct and can speak about it like that. When I first started, I'd plan, I'd have to think about it, it'd be more sciencey. And because it's in my brain and it's really clear in my brain, sometimes when I'm talking to somebody, I'm thinking, I talked to you about that last week, like, is it not sunk in? And I'm thinking, yeah, but Sally, you've got to remember that it took you 5, 6, 7 years to get this clarity in your thoughts. So just be patient, just keep reinforcing the messages, keep coming back to it, and it will get there eventually. So that's been really my challenge.
Thank you.
Sally, yes, studying neuroscience and child development, has that created any internal conflicts for you about the sport?
No, I wouldn't say internal conflict. I think more of a drive to actually get the message out there more and start to look at where it can be embedded. I think coach education is a big piece that it can be embedded in. It's definitely made me a driver, for definite, in a sense of it's probably what I feel like is missing part in the game. And also from a societal point of view, can have a massive impact. I just said the other day that I've, because of the performance end, I've gone more into the 18s and 21s. Mm-hmm. I do really like the child development. I think it's key for us. I think the foundation phase is key in here. So, no, I've not had no internal conflict. It's more of a driver to actually get the message more out there and actually challenge if I need to challenge people, but put myself in situations that are maybe sometimes uncomfortable for me for being at front of the stage or whatever, but to really try and influence the key makers and the fact that we do need probably more education around this piece. And it's been a case that we just haven't applied it into football. So no, I won't say internal challenge, more of an actual driver to get the message out there a little bit more and to change some of the things that I think that we can affect more. Or, and it's not as much to change that we're doing things bad. It's more around understanding of the why we do stuff. So why are we doing arrival activity? We do arrival activity because of X, Y, and Z. And if we're more purposeful and we have more of a knowledge with it, we have a more purposeful interaction, which gives us more better intervention and an interaction that then is more purposeful for child development and emotional resilience. So we do some really good stuff. It's just, it's more of the fact of when we underpin it by the science, we're more likely to do it on a regular basis and reinforce it and tweak and adapt it to get the best out for the children.
Thank you. And finally, Sally, is everything that you've learned, how's that changed your approach to your own well-being? What advice would you give to listeners to maintain or improve their own well-being on the basis of what you know?
Loads. Absolutely loads. So, and I just said the other day, it's a transition period. It's like it's up and down. So nobody's perfect. And we go into a really good run for a couple of months and then something happens and then we're out of it for a couple of runs. But I've got a really good and amazing academy manager. I did before with Jack Weston, now with Dell. Really good. And I'll say to him sometimes, like, my cup's empty. Like, I need 2 days off or a day off where I just refill my cup to come back in and do my job properly. And he's like, take whatever you want. And I think that's helped me, the fact of I do them breaks. Also, I do a lot of running. I do my own journaling. I go and do my breath work. I go and try and have that time. Do I need to be slightly better? Yes, I said that the other night. Because you get sometimes in them wheels of just in delivering. And that's been a big thing for me when I've been in full time. You have the benefit of being in around the boys more, being around the staff more, being able to put the program in more. The downside is that you're in more. So you'll then become the one that doesn't have your time. So I've tried to be better at it. Could I be better at it? Yes. But I try and put the bits in. I try and do my running, do my yoga, go into nature. I know it all. Have my baths, but sometimes life gets in the way. So I think once you then catch yourself, you then go, right, I need to then start looking at it a bit back again. I did quite a bit of stuff on my sleep, which is major for it, and try and stick to it, put my do not disturb on. But yeah, it's a process, isn't it? It goes up and down. So next week I go on camp, tomorrow I go on camp. I know for a fact when I get back 10 days on camp, yeah, cognitively just gone. So I'll have that to deal with as well. And that's the thing of sometimes when I'm in here all day and they are coming to me, which is brilliant, and I've got to be present. Sometimes in the night, I just don't want to talk. Like, my phone will ring and I'm like cognitively can't think. So I'll ring you back tomorrow when I can be more present and be more purposeful with it. And I think that's the thing, that we're all human. Like, we don't have to be this perfect human being. But I know what works for me. I know what the science says. It goes in troughs. But, yeah, it's about as well then catching yourself when you're feeling like it and going, no, you know what, I need this little bit of time just back for me. And I feel sometimes like that's a guilt thing in here because you want to do a good job and football is just, you work so many hours, and that's probably part of the system again. And I think you sometimes have to go, no, for the better of the players and the staff, I need my time to then come back in better. So, yeah, so that's how I deal with it. But I have got a very good, and I did have, and I have now, very good academy manager that really does understand that.
Thank you, Sally. Really great to hear what you're doing there and applying things so operationally, and clearly very passionate about what you're doing. Great to have you on. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me. Enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Sally. Really great meeting you.
You too, David.